This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Dogcast Radio, our special first anniversary programme. In this episode, we talk to Connie Bowen, a very talented pet portrait painter.
I always paint in the eyes first, and then I feel the animal's energy is there with me, and I can just build the painting around the eyes.
In Puppy Playtime, Jenny tells us how Star has had a taste of stardom.
She was recently invited to take part in a photo shoot by the UK magazine Dogs Today. This is not her only claim to fame, as she has been on television.
And I'll be bringing you my reflections on our first year. During our first year, we've brought you many breed profiles, including Labrador, Rottweiler, Greater Swiss Mountain Dog, Italian Greyhound, Great Dane, Labradoodle, Yorkshire Terrier, Bichon Frise and Irish Setters. We've had advice from professional trainers, starting with Joe Timko in the US at the gorgeous Canyon View Ranch. Then we've had the brilliant Mim Edwards from Australia. And we've also benefited from great advice from Steve Fryer and Gwen Bailey in the UK. What has really made Dogcast Radio is the characters we've met. And boy, have we met some. It started right back in episode one with this delightful lady and her three lovely Labradors.
Why did I choose Labradors? I've always had Labradors in my adult life, and we live well together. We just, you know, we work together well. They like my lifestyle, I like the way they fit in. So that's the answer, really. Nothing, you know, no rocket science in it. I like the way they look. I particularly like chocolates, as you can see, because I've got three of them. No, I think they're very biddable dogs. They're very easy dogs. They're good. It doesn't matter whether it's country or town or, you know, urban or suburban. They're just good dogs, good all round. Good with children, good guard dogs at the same time. But very biddable, very easy, very comfortable. And I love them. I love them. Right, this one is 2 in October. The middle one, EO, is 8 months. And the puppy, China, which is this one's sister, is 4 months. So it's called madness, as I said. But, you know, they grow up so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's only a few months of absolute havoc. You know, as I said to the other lady, you know, have a gin and tonic when you get up in the morning. Oh, no, they have the rest of the bottle, you know.
Isn't she great? Now, you've heard of a boxer dog, but what about a kick boxer dog? Well, the dog in question is actually a black Russian terrier who lives with owner Russ Williams. This is a fun partnership, as is apparent even from the name Russ gave his dog.
When I first got him, I wanted like a Russian name, and I was looking all through books, and the name that I liked sort of thing was that. Hmm. And then, but one day when I was looking at him with his long hair covering his eyes, I thought he looked like one of the Beatles. So that's why I called him Ringo's Zar. Is the Russian version of the Beatles, and, you know, I keep telling everyone that after he's learned to do kickboxing, I'm going to learn him to teach the drums as well, like, you know.
How did it come about that you taught him kickboxing then?
It just seemed as it's playing, or if it, like, wants to come in the house or something, if he thinks the door, like a normal dog will push through the door, but this one was jumping up on the back legs and hitting the door with his front feet, and it seemed powerful, so I was thinking that, you know, if I could get him to do that to command, then it seemed to be a natural thing with the black Russian terrier to use the front legs. But, like I say, with me kickboxing training and that, you know, I'm used to teaching young children that have got no confidence and everything like that. So it's just the same sort of way, and you reward them when they get a bit stronger in that, and, you know, that's how it come about. Mm. It might sound surprising, but it's not much different, really, than, like, a shy human that hasn't got much confidence, getting them to do it and getting the dog to do it. There wasn't much difference. He picked it up pretty quick. You know, he can't do it on command all the time, and he's not great power all the time, but, like, let's say now and again, he throws a lot of power in, then you reward him, and then over time, he'll just get better and better, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Another sporty lot we met were the Paddle Paws group, who enjoy water training their magnificent Newfoundlands.
We train the Newfoundlands in water rescue, which is basically we're training them to come out to the boat, pull the boat back in. Another element on a different level is they'll jump out of the boat and then pick the rope up and pull it back. They are actually used in water rescue. Actually use them for water rescue. And I think it's Italy. They have them jumping out of helicopters into water to rescue people.
Wow. Yeah. You haven't progressed to that yet?
We've not quite got that far. Got the caravans, got the cars to trail them around the country, but we've not got the helicopter yet.
No.
And we're not brave enough to jump out of it anyway. The dog is more than capable of pulling two people back. Well, I say that they will pull 14 people back.
Where?
We have actually done that with one of the dogs.
Where?
You get 14 people out in the water, you go right out and you form a line. The dog comes to the person in the front, turns, person in the front. What you actually do is you put your back to the dog, hold the harness, and then you put a leg out in the water, and then the next person will hoop round that leg. And that person puts their leg up, and the next person hoops round the leg, and you do it all the way along the line, and they pull the lot back.
That sounds fun, doesn't it? If you're looking for somewhere to care for your dog while you're on vacation, we talked to the owner of the most luxurious dog and cat hotel.
We're a new state-of-the-art 16,000 square foot facility, and what we have are private luxurious suites. Each one of the suites has its own color TV we play doggy cartoons on. They're decorated beautifully with pictures and rugs, and you can bring goodies from home, like their favorite bed, blankie, toys, things like that. And then during the day, we've got an indoor doggy park. And what we do is we divide the little babies from the larger ones. And in the doggy park, we've got 6 32-inch color TVs for the movies and the music. Also, there's an indoor grass courtyard where they get to run, play, exercise, and do their business. So if the owners like, during the day, the babies get to play and socialize with other dogs their own size, then the evening they go into a private suite for some quiet time with their own things, and the owners get to bring the food their babies are used to eating so the diet stays the same. It's kind of like a Bellagio for the doggies.
Pam Dennison is a trainer with some fantastic advice to motivate your dog.
Okay, because you're not a soda machine, you're not a candy machine, you know, you put a dollar in and you get a package of candy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know that's what you know, you put your money in and that's exactly what you're going to get. Well, then you leave the machine because that's all you know you're going to get. So if you vary the rewards, it's more interesting for the dog. Okay?
Yeah.
Because they never know what they're going to get next. So you build this very intense focus, and once you have that intense focus, then you can train anything. Okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because if you give the same old thing all the time, you become really boring. It makes the training process more fun and interesting for them, and it makes it more fun and interesting for the handler as well.
Okay, I shall try that. I shall try being bizarre.
Yep.
And see where it gets
me. And believe me, you can get pretty bizarre. I mean, I get pretty bizarre. You know, you can pluck grass and fling it up in the air going, whew. They love that. Well, most dogs love it. Some dogs look at you like you're insane. Like, why are you doing that? And other dogs think that is just way cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gets the owner into the process of having more fun. You know, how much fun is it to dole out a cookie versus how much fun is it to, you know, maybe give 10 cookies and then run around silly, and then chase after your dog,
mm-hmm.
and then pet him, and then tell him to go sniff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is like fun stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, throw sticks or leaves up in the air, or snow, or grass, or whatever.
So far, so good. But Pam's second interview was more controversial, and her comments on kids and dogs certainly provoked a response from you.
Children and dogs. Children and dogs. Don't have both. and a lot of breeders are saying this now and not selling dogs to people that have kids under 10.
Mm.
because we're a busy world now.
Mm.
You know, I don't know how it is in your country, but in this country, most of the households here are dual income just to survive.
Yeah.
So you've got mom and dad are work, kids in school, you've got dog home all alone, then everybody comes home, then the kids have all these after-school activities, and the dog is still sitting at home.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And they don't have time to take the dog and train, so that the dog is now totally untrained, older, out of control, and no one still has time for the dog.
Agree or disagree with her? She's a great trainer and a great character. Can your dog do tricks? How does he compare to our next character, a very clever Bichon called Willy? We talked to his owner, Sarah.
Okay, well, it started out when I taught him how to speak on command. So he's a naturally vocal dog. So, you know, when I'm treating my dog, I use whatever techniques or whatever skills come to me naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So he likes to bark a lot. And so I taught him how to bark on command. And eventually that drove my dad nuts. So I started looking around for something else to teach him. And I noticed that my dog sneezes and he's happy. So I taught him to sneeze on command by saying hachu every time he sneezes. And he picked it up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's his favorite trick of all. So when he wants to communicate with us, he'll go hachu, hachu. And he's a real character to have around the house now. He knows a gun trick. So you point your finger at him and say, bang. And then I do this hand signal for lie down.
Mm.
And he'll lie down. And then I'll say crawl, and he will crawl forward, and I do the hand signal for crawl.
Mm-hmm.
And he picks up better on the hand signals when he does the vocal commands, except for the whole hachu part. And then I'll say roll over, and he'll roll over, and he's just a silly little ham. And the more people are around watching him, the better he is. He doesn't have a very good success rate when it's just me and him.
Mm.
But when there's a whole bunch of people watching, then he'll go nuts, and he'll do every command, and he's got this little smile on his face, and his tail will be wagging.
Yeah, yeah. He likes to play to the crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
This is Willy sneezing on cue.
Achoo! 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 Good boy.
Sadly, Willy is no longer with us, and Sarah and her family are mourning that lovely character. I'll always be grateful that hearing about Willy helped lead us to getting a Bichon of our own. Now, our guest in episode 15 was a mystery guest, Dog Lady.
Basically, Ask Dog Lady is every question about you and your dog that you were afraid to ask all those all-knowing experts. Dog Lady deals with a lot of questions that have nothing to do with health or aggressive behavior, except on your part, of course.
Excellent.
But basically, I did a lot of reading when I first got my dog, and there was nothing that I really wanted to read. You know, I tried going onto message boards and was always shooed off for being too dumb, and I just thought, you know, I need to write something that is funny because there's so much humor in dogs.
Mm.
And we'll deal with all these questions about the etiquette surrounding humans and dogs.
Mm.
Dog Lady's basic philosophy is all dogs are perfect, it's the humans that need help.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
So, if you're an imperfect human in need of help, ask Dog Lady. I think my favourite character was Sandy Hall, a lady with a big heart and an even bigger dog.
Well, for anyone that doesn't know, can you tell us Gibson's claim to fame?
Claim to fame?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right off the top of my head, world's tallest dog.
Yep.
Guinness World Records.
And
right real close to that, he loves everybody unconditionally, all of the time, no matter what.
Just how tall is he?
He's about 43 inches at the shoulders.
Wow, that's big.
You know, I'm 5'6". He rests his head comfortably on my shoulder. So
wow.
I know that's at the 5-foot mark, you know.
Yeah, oh, wow. So how do you establish that your dog, you know, how do you get your dog into the Guinness Book of Records?
Ooh, years and years of paperwork, determination, and pure craziness. You know, just wacky, wacky, crazy behavior. You want to hear Gibson say, I love you? Gibson,
yes.
Come here. Say, I love you. Come here, Gibson. I love you.
Oh, wow.
He's mumbling, but he's warming up. But, you know, people ask, where does he sleep? I sleep in a twin bed, and I have two Danes with me on the bed. So there's three of us, including Gibson, on a twin bed.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's... You wake up with parts of you that didn't, you know, you didn't even know you could go to sleep, you know, or numb.
I think there's a joke in there, isn't there, somewhere? Like, you know,
yeah.
Where does the world's largest dog sleep? Wherever he likes.
Anywhere he wants.
Yes.
You may recall that Sandy has also bred another dog, Bigson, who looks to be shaping up to break Gibson's record. Alongside our interviews, we've had our regular Dogcast features, the news, puppy playtime, Buddy's diary, and 2-minute fiction. We'll finish our look back with the story that most of you seem to like, our Christmas story about the vet and the Weimaraner. It was 2 days before Christmas and almost time to go home for the evening. But when you're a vet, you get used to the fact that from time to time, people barge into your surgery demanding emergency treatment for their pet, and it won't always be at a convenient time. These cases are always the saddest, often road accidents, and it's always touch and go whether the animal survives. This time was no different. She swept in with her dog, only this time it was walking at her heels, not clutched, bleeding in her arms, and he was as agitated as his mistress. "I want to see the vet now," she announced. "What seems to be..." I started my usual professional patter, but she cut across me. "I want you to put my dog down." She spat the words out. Her breathing was heavy, and the dog pulled at the lead, scratching at the door in a vain attempt to escape. Pardon? I stammered ineffectually. "I want you to destroy my dog." She glared down at the offending Weimaraner dog. Without warning, she gave a vicious tug on the lead, bringing the unfortunate dog cannoning back against her knee. She was losing patience with me, too, now. "I want my dog put to sleep. Do you understand? Can you do it?" I wavered. I just didn't know how I could help Max. If I didn't do it, she would take him off somewhere else. But to put a healthy dog down goes against the grain. I thought of how much I loved and would defend my own dogs, and yet how quickly this woman was prepared to abandon her dog. Don't judge me too harshly, but I decided on the only course of action I could. I would make it as painless as possible for everyone. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk on this, our first anniversary programme. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Well, you've heard of the film The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Indeed I have. So is that the theme for today's news?
Yes, starting with the good. We have an excellent example being set by a politician's wife. Laureen Harper, who is married to the Canadian Prime Minister, would apparently love to have a dog of her own, but she acknowledges the fact that her lifestyle is not currently compatible with bringing a dog into the family. Laureen points out that she and her family lack the time to give the dog necessary exercise and also travel too much to keep a dog happy. This is a brilliant role model for all of us. If we don't have time for a dog, the time's not right to have one.
And the bad is definitely the example being set by the police in New South Wales, Australia, where the force's use of electric collars in their dog training program is under investigation by the RSPCA. Apparently, the collars are illegal in New South Wales, but the force is under the impression that they are above the law and so can use the collars. But what about the ugly?
Well, more of that later in the program when we explore the world of doggy fashion. But first we turn to some stories that sound like they are straight from the pages of a whodunit novel.
Australian police in Sydney are on the trail of a heartless thief who makes use of dogs in his criminal schemes. Apparently, motorbike owners have been duped by a man who test drives bikes for sale, leaving behind his dog as security. However, both the man and the motorbike fail to return, and the poor dog is left abandoned. So far, this has happened twice, with the poor dogs currently in local shelters.
Meanwhile, staying in the southern hemisphere but moving to New Zealand, there could be a canine answer to a feline mystery in the vicinity of Ashburton. Over the course of several years, there have been sightings of a big cat, possibly a panther. However, when recently discovered footprints of the mystery animal were inspected, they were more likely to have been made by a dog than a cat. This was the conclusion reached by officials, as the footprints had claw marks, and while dogs' claw marks are present in their footprints, cats tend only to unsheathe their claws for an attack and walk with them retracted.
While the suspected panther is a fiction, this next item may sound like fiction, but it is actually real. Would you buy a collar that sensed low light conditions and glowed to help you keep track of your dog? Sounds good, but there's more. What if the collar could also automatically inflate into a lifesaver should your dog fall into water unexpectedly, while flashing LEDs helps you locate your pet should such a fate befall him at night? Brilliant, but there's still more. What if the whole device was solar powered so you never had to worry about failing batteries? The good news is that such a gadget does exist, but the bad news is that it is at present only a prototype, so you can't rush out and buy one yet. The aptly named Floater Pet is still being developed by artist Jed Burke, but is definitely one to keep an eye out for. We'll keep you posted.
Now, from purely functional wear to attire of a more ornamental nature. According to pet products expert Charlotte Reed, the perfect pet wardrobe has to consist of the practical, the stylish, and, of course, the outrageous. Apparently, canine fashions will mirror human trends, and Charlotte has offered a sneak peek at the pet fashion forecast for fall 2006.
In the era of the humanization of pets, which has inspired the latest batch of luxury pet products, some pet owners want their dogs dressed to reflect their lifestyles. This idea was exemplified by Paris Hilton and her pampered pet, Tinkerbell. Miss Hilton demonstrated that pet owners should dress their dogs to reflect their personal style, whether to walk the red carpet or everyday life. As a result, it is not uncommon for dog owners to have at least 10 dog collars and leashes, matching outfits and a variety of pet carrier bags. In fact, pet carrier bags are more stylish than ever, being called pet fashion totes, and are designed like women's handbags.
So, according to the experts, if you want your dog to keep up with the latest fashions, here's what to look out for.
Plaid or tweed coats, as well as trench-style raincoats, will be all the rage. Cashmere sweaters are coming back in beautiful bright colours, as well as argyle prints and soft prints adorned with the sparkle and shine of Swarovski crystals to give them a gentle touch.
Pet fashion is not just for small dogs anymore. Big dogs will have a chance to strut their stuff as more and more ranges will be including larger sizes.
If all that sounds too exotic, try beautiful leather collars and leashes in chocolate, dark green and rich red with gold hardware.
And the latest pet fashion trend? A closet for your pampered pooch. A smart way to keep your pet fashion looking its best is to hang her wardrobe on doggy wooden hangers.
Before you buy doggy fashions, look at the care instructions. Wool, cashmere and other fine fabrics need to be dry cleaned. Some clothes can be machine or hand washed, but should be dripped dry to avoid shrinkage.
And finally, pet designers are seeking inspiration from runway fashions. As a result, more pet fashion shows are being produced, whether for charity or entertainment. This fall, a pet runway show will be the seen and be seen event in your area.
For more tips from Charlotte Reed, check out her website via the link on the Dogcast site.
If you want to be in with the crowd, but don't think your dog would stand for being dressed up to the nines, don't despair. Dog bowls have become the latest status symbol amongst affluent dog owners across the United States. Dog bowls now come in all colours, shapes, sizes and materials, some costing 10 times more than the $10 dog bowls you find in a pet store. These status symbol dog bowls are typically ceramic or steel. But what makes these items unusual isn't the material, it's the design. Some come in pastel pinks and yellows, others are shaped like an oval tilted on its side, more reminiscent of a piece of modern art sculpture than a place for a dog to drink water.
I should add, however, that not all these designs are purely aesthetic. In addition to the water capacity of these personalised dog bowls, these companies offer raised dog bowls as well, for those taller dogs. These elevated dog bowls are sometimes situated 1 to 2 feet above the ground. It's an ideal way to pamper senior dogs with joint problems who may have trouble bending over constantly to drink from a water bowl.
Two designers of dog bowls, Joanne Hudson and Pedish, offer custom-made and engraved dog bowls. These personalised dog bowls allow the owner to engrave their dog's name on the bowl. You can choose a variety of font, size and colours, with gold and platinum apparently being very popular. These personalised dog bowls can be large or small or anything in between. According to Dr. Deborah Primovic, veterinarian and resident dog expert at the Pet Place website, designer dog bowls are only one of the many ways dogs are being pampered by their owners. Dr. Primovic says, these dog bowls all get the job done by satisfying a thirsty dog. A noticeable portion of today's market for dog bowls is more about preference, status and fashion than it is about function.
Well, if all this talk of fashion leaves your head spinning, don't worry, because as a wise man once said, if your dog's water bowl is a bucket and his lead a piece of string, as long as he knows you love him, it doesn't matter a thing.
Ah, that's lovely. So who was that wise man, Nick?
Me. And that's all from us today on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Since this episode is our anniversary special, we thought it would be appropriate to include something that could be a perfect gift for an anniversary or any special occasion. Connie Bowen is a very talented pet portrait painter, and her work is not only beautiful, but it gives a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. She told me what's involved in the process of painting a pet portrait.
Usually I'm contacted either by email or phone, and the person, the customer who would like the portrait, explains a little bit about their animal that they'd like painted, and then we discuss more of the details as to the size canvas and the price and when they need their painting by.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're in the area here, we can get together, and sometimes they want to see samples that I've got here, and they bring their photos if they've got some photos, if they have not already emailed them to me, and we generally go through the photos together talking about the animal, and a lot of times the one photo that they wanted the painting to be done of is not the one we end up with. We find another one, and they say, I've heard people say, oh, that particular photo, I didn't think you'd be able to do that one, so I picked another one. And there's usually some particular photo that they, through our discussions, it turns out they really do want that particular one painted.
Mm. Something that perhaps shows a certain aspect of the pet's personality.
Right, and sometimes I'll, through our discussions, I'll realize if we could combine two photos, that would be the best. One lady had an Australian Shepherd picture, and Annie's ears were back. Otherwise, the picture was beautiful. And then she had another photo. The expression wasn't quite right, but Annie had put her ears up. That was such a small, easy change just to bring those ears up. We just combined the two photos.
Yeah, yes, of course, you can sort of mix and match to an extent, can't you?
Yeah, and another person wanted a different, totally a different body with that particular head, and I thought, oh, this is going to be more tricky, but it did work out. I was kind of holding my breath when I sent them the picture of the final painting, and they said it was great, luckily.
Mm. And how did you get into being a pet portrait painter?
Well, I majored in art in college and then became a court reporter, court stenographer, for 23 years. And when I retired from that, I went back to my art, my first love. And I thought that, really, I love animals so much. I wanted some kind of new profession that combined my art and my love of animals, and got some illustrated children's books published. And then decided I would really like to work one-on-one with people for their paintings. It's worked out great.
Mm. And obviously, they always say, don't they, don't work with children or animals. so has this working with animals led to any funny experiences?
Yeah, sometimes people don't have a photo, and so I'll go to their house and take the photo of the animal for them. one lady had quite shaky hands. She was an artist herself, but couldn't paint the painting. And she had a really aged Rottweiler named Ginger. And I asked her, is Ginger friendly? And she said, oh, yes, yes, come on out. Well, it turned out that Ginger was terribly camera shy. Every time I pulled out my little digital camera, which isn't that big, she would hide.
Aww.
Just every second. It was just impossible. So Annette, the lady, gave her a chew toy, one of the little chew toys, and Ginger had quite a bit of arthritis in her hips, so she couldn't get away very fast. And she climbed under the dining room table and began enjoying her chew toy, and I thought, oh, now's my chance. She won't be able to get away very quickly from me. So I just rolled on my stomach, you know, got closer and closer and started moving chairs away and climbed under the table. And I thought, okay, I'll either be killed or I'll get a great photo. And she didn't growl. I was really listening for any growls. And then Annette said, Ginger. And she looked up and I snapped the picture and it worked out. I just, in the painting, took away the furniture.
Mm. Yeah. Now, we have that picture on the website for anybody that wants to go and look. And it is a gorgeous one.
Thank you. Sometimes, and I carry a little squeaky toy, too, and I have to be careful with the young labs. As soon as I squeak the toy, which helps them bring their ears up, they can charge at me for playtime, and I've been knocked over several times.
Yes, yes. We recently had tried to get some professional pictures done of our Labrador, and the response is just too enthusiastic, isn't it?
It is. And then another time I realized that the squeaky toy wasn't working, but the dog's mom said, well, try these little treats. So I had a treat, and boy, the dog just, it was Rosie. She just stared at me, and I realized, oh, I can control exactly the angle of her nose. If I put the treat down a little bit, her nose goes down, down just inches at a time, and she was staring at the treat. And that worked out really well.
Mm. Now, we have some pictures of pugs as well.
Right. I was at a dog show, large dog show here in Portland, Oregon, and some people came by that were holding their little puppies, their pugs, and they were so adorable. I couldn't resist. I said, oh, may I take some photos of your pugs? And we got to talking, and she said she would like a portrait, but she wanted something different. And she said, I love primary colors, red, yellow, and blue, as bright as can be. And sure enough, she was wearing a red sweater. She's a very outgoing lady. And she said, in fact, if you could somehow put a hot air balloon in the painting, I would just love it. So I got to use some of my whimsical illustration background to put different aspects together for her. And that's been a really, really popular print, that particular painting for them.
Mm, it's lovely. Another one that I really liked, and just the expression in that beagle's, is it Bex?
Oh, Bex.
Yeah.
Right, Bex is a bit of a champion here.
Hmm.
He's from Canada. I met him at that dog show, too. And the lady who is the guardian of Bex gave me a photo of him in the parking lot, and then she said, could you put a briar type of a background that a beagle would be most comfortable in, hunting, for the background of that painting? And so I combined the two, a briary background, and she sent that finished JPEG that I had sent her of the painting over to Hofflin Publishing, and it ended up on the cover of the Beagle Annual book, all about beagles.
Mm.
So I was just thrilled, and that's led to many more beagle paintings, actually.
that is beautiful, the expression in the dog's eyes. It's just beautiful.
Oh, well, he came into my booth. A lot of times at the dog shows, I get to meet the dogs, and he just sat there, and, you know, beagles have the biggest, softest brown eyes, and just stared at me, and I just thought, oh, I'm very fortunate to be able to paint his portrait, because I got to meet him, and he's just so beautiful.
Mm, mm. Now, sometimes I gather that the paintings that you do are so nice that there's a bit of trouble, you know, a bit of squabbling about who actually gets the painting.
Right. It started out with her just wanting, she wrote to me and said, oh, I'd like three or four animals on a canvas. So I said, okay, great. And then she said, well, would it be okay if I had just a few more? And I said, well, it'll need to be a bit larger canvas, but fine. And when the envelope came in the mail, she had like 10 different photos. And I thought, this is going to take me a month to paint all these, but it went pretty fast. They're pretty small, you know, portraits, and managed to lay it all out. And when I was done, I sent her the picture over the web, and she wrote back and said she had forwarded that to her two grown daughters, and they were fighting over who in the will would be written as to who would get the painting. And I had just started doing these portraits at that time, and when I heard that, I thought, oh my goodness, these are special gifts then. They're not your usual gifts.
Yeah.
People will be fighting over them.
Oh. I mean, again, that particular picture is you can see that on the website, and I think you can see why it would be so special to someone who had loved those animals. You know, it would be a very special picture to have on your wall, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. So that's one aspect I love about this work is, you know, giving people such wonderful treasures to keep. It's really, really one of my favorite parts of my profession here. Besides watching the animals come to life on the canvas, I always paint in the eyes first, and then I feel the animal's energy is there with me, and I can just build the painting around the eyes.
And I mean, I think the thing is, you can obviously, an animal that you have with you, you are able to photograph. A lot of the commissions you get are animals that are no longer with their owners, aren't they?
Right, they are. They're probably more than a third of the animals have already passed over. One dog named Paccio, I met a woman at the dog show from Italy, and her dog had died years before, and she breeds Sharpeys. And she emailed me a photo of she's actually holding the dog's tail up in a position that I just took her out of the painting, and then there's kind of a little bit of Italy in the background. And that was the first time after I painted that painting and set it up here in my studio to dry that I realized that as I looked in the painting, it was almost like he was there, and that kind of shook me up. I thought, oh my gosh, this really does, to some extent, bring the animal spirit to life. They're kind of with you there in the painting, and so I was really thrilled to do that for her, and she was so happy to receive it. It took quite a while to get to her, but it finally did. It worked out.
Oh, yeah, I bet she was thrilled. Oh. And having an animal portrait done, if you don't commission it for yourself, it makes a wonderful gift, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was adding up all my portraits from last year, and it was like 46% or something. It was like almost half were gifts for someone else, and they are really the best gifts. It's not something that's going to tarnish and become lackluster, fall into disrepair, and get thrown out or something like your average type of thing. It's something that really touches your heart. There's one I did of a little chihuahua. That one with the roses. I just checked my mail one day, and there was a mouse pad in the mail with a check. It said, can you paint this? And it was a picture of a little chihuahua on the mouse pad, and I wrote to the man, and because I don't really want to start a painting until I've really talked to the guardians and found out about the animal's name, just everything I can. And in talking to him, it turns out that he'd had a collie who had died, and he promised himself he would never, ever have another dog. And one day, it was all raining and cold. He lives in Texas, and he heard this whimpering outside the front door. And he opened the door, and there was a little tiny puppy, a chihuahua, this little starving, wet dog, and he brought her in and promised he would keep her only until he found someone for her. And, of course, he never did. And she goes to work with him every day and flies in the private jet.
just wow.
And goes everywhere. And so that's why in the painting I put the roses. I thought, oh my gosh, she's so important to him. I've got to add roses into the painting. So that's the story behind that painting.
So it doesn't have to be someone who lives near you that you can actually visit the animal. This could be, you know, wherever somebody lives, they can still commission a painting from you.
Right. It's just very, very easy. And, you know, then they see the painting on the web with the JPEG before they ever receive it, and then they can make comments like, can you make the cat's whiskers a little bit longer, or fix that little toenail. I think the sand on the beach covered his toenail too much. And I go, oh my gosh, you're right. And we go back and forth till the painting. Most of the time it's just fine, but occasionally there are some changes, and I'm happy to make those and keep sending JPEGs. So when it's just perfect, then I spray it to protect it and ship it. And it's all insured, and people get their paintings.
Yeah. And as you say, a beautiful lifelong gift, isn't it? It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, and people who I've painted for, I didn't know this was going to happen. They've become like my extended family. They write to me and tell me when they have a new puppy.
And
they say, well, do you remember me from 2 years ago? We have a new puppy and we want this puppy painted. And then they'll send a picture of their other dog that I had known and now the new puppy. And I love seeing the photos. People's photos are so much fun and creative. That's like the one of the two cats in the basket. I would never think in my imagination of posing cats that particular way, but one man sent me a picture of his Skipper Key, and she was sitting in amongst all her stuffed toys. So there's a little stuffed duck and a stuffed chicken and a stuffed monkey, and all these stuffed toys. So I was just thrilled to paint that. That was really, really a fun painting of Katie. One thing, too, is how much we all have in common. No matter who I do a painting for, from someone who, you know, has a grand estate and that kind of life, to the little tiny woman. Oh, I did a painting for an 89-year-old woman who just, you know, wanted a little tiny painting to take to her nursing home with her. No matter who it is, we're all connected by our love for our animals. A man commissioned a gift for his girlfriend, who's an architect, and of her current terrier named Archie, and gave me a photo, and I did the painting. And then he sent that photo on of the painting, the JPEG, to his girlfriend. It was meant to be a surprise painting. And he said, she may want some changes. Well, she did not want the layout of the painting at all. She wanted a close-up. So he wrote back and he said, can you change this painting to a close-up and make it, you know, a totally different painting? And I said, well, I'll have to repaint it for you. So she designed her own painting, and it was on a square canvas with a red, bright red background. She sent exactly what she wanted to me, a layout. And I called her and I said, do you really want his ears cropped off? Take the tip of his ears off in the painting and that kind of thing? And she said, oh, yes, yes. And that's become one of my most popular styles now. People see that and they want that kind of Andy Warhol style of the big headshot and the bright background. Or people do love that. And that was one totally designed by one of my clients. I never, ever would have done something like that.
No, no. It is very different, isn't it? It's very striking, that one.
Striking, yes. I can send you the photo of the one that I did, and then you can compare sort of my style with her style.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that would be useful. That would be great, yeah.
This man from New York sent me over the web a black and white photo of his parents' cat named Boris when he was a kitten. He had passed over the Rainbow Bridge and now had died, and but it was a black and white photo, and it looked to be probably a gray tabby. So I said, oh, yes, I can do this painting for you. Was Boris a gray tabby, and did he have a pinkish nose or gray nose? And I was thinking I would add color. And he said, oh, no, no, I want the painting to look exactly like this, black and white, just like that. So I never use black in my paintings. It's a mixture of red, blue, and green, and you get a very lustrous dark that reads as black in the painting, but it's not the real black, so it's not so dead-looking as a real black would be. And so I just made several different shades of grays and blues and all different colors to get that kind of a grayish look. And so that's kind of interesting how that turned out. I never had done that before.
Mm, that must have been a real challenge.
It was a challenge. But I knew if I had just squeezed out some black and made, you know, with some white, gray, and black, it wouldn't have near the depth or the interest as the finished painting with all these subtle colors that reflect the light.
Mm. That's part of the artist's gift, isn't it? That to ordinary people, you know, I wouldn't have a clue what colors to mix together to get the different shades and the beautiful effects that you do.
Right, yeah, you do through all the painting experience. And it's kind of tricky to listen to what the client wants and yet to think how that could be improved or really what is possible. I just did a painting of Jack Russell, and he was up on his back legs and looking with his mouth open like he wanted to have maybe a cookie thrown to him or something. He was playing, and the man who commissioned that said that he definitely wanted that pose. And I said, well, it's kind of with his mouth open and gaping that way, it kind of detracts, I thought. So I said, well, let's just put a red ball in his mouth. And he said, oh, he has a favorite red ball. That will be great. So I got to work painting the pose and realized I didn't know what the heck that would look like with a red ball in his mouth, what size. And it just did not look right, my imagination. So I called him back and I said, do you think you could take a quick snapshot of this, give him his red ball, and then take a photo? And he did. And that was a big help. So that was a combination of the two. But he really did rescue me. I volunteered to do that and then found myself in a lot of trouble. I realized not something I could do that easily.
Do you have pets yourself?
Yes, I have. I had two Australian Shepherds, brother and sister, but we lost Harley, the sister, and we have Jesse now. He's a 5-year-old Australian Shepherd.
Have you painted them?
Yes, I did. They were actually posed in our living room, and the light was streaming in through the big picture window, and so they were backlit, and I thought that was so beautiful. And I painted them that way and then put them in the garden by our rock wall. In my imagination, I just painted a different background.
That was really interesting, and it must be so nice, because to enjoy the, you know, the actual painting and then to give other people such pleasure, it must be a wonderful thing to do.
It is. It's really, really heartwarming for both of us, really.
All the paintings we discussed are on the Dogcast website, and they really are beautiful. If you would like Connie to paint your pet, there's also a link to Connie's own site. And now, 2-Minute Fiction, Loss, written by Julie Hill, performed by Nick Coldham, Grace Miller and Julie Hill. I don't know what to do. I really don't. My dog was stolen today. I only left her for 5 minutes while I went into a shop. A loaf of bread, 2 pints of milk, you know, just a few things. She was just outside the shop. I tied her lead to the fence, and when I came out, she was gone. I couldn't believe it. My little dog. She's only a puppy, just a few months old. Someone had taken her. I've contacted a lady who runs a website that helps to find lost and stolen dogs, and she says, probably within 10 minutes of being stolen, she was sold in the nearest pub. My little Susie, she's never been in a pub. She'd be frightened. I'm out of my mind with worry. If I don't get her back, I don't know what I'll do. It was just a few minutes. I never thought anyone would steal her.
This is the easiest bit of money I've ever earned. So easy you wouldn't believe it. I needed some money, and there it was, waiting in the street for me, like a gift. Some idiot left a dog tied up outside a shop. I couldn't get over my luck. I mean, if he left a pile of cash on the pavement when he went into a shop, you wouldn't expect it to be there when he came back out of the shop, would you? Of course you wouldn't. I had a quick look around, checked no one was watching, and then it was just a few seconds' work to untie the lead, pick the dog up, and run away. I was down that road in gold medal time, I tell you. Straight into the pub, and I sold the dog within 10 minutes. Easy money, like I said. Didn't get as much for it as I wanted. But you've got to unload the goods fast. Still, I can get more tomorrow. There's idiots all over the place, tying up their dogs and leaving it.
Where's my person? Where's my family? My pack? I'm not happy. It's all strange here. It smells wrong. I don't like it when she leaves me on my own. But she always come back for me up until now. Maybe I did something wrong and she stopped loving me. I've tried to be good, but sometimes I just forget what the rules are. I get all excited and interested in something, and I don't listen to her calling me back. Or I forget I need to go out in the garden, and I make a mess on the floor. I didn't know it made her so angry. If she would just come and take me home, I promise I'll try and be better. I don't know how these strangers will treat me. I don't know where the food is, or the water bowl. I just want to go home.
If I can just get my dog back, I swear I will never leave her outside a shop again.
Easy money. I'll definitely be doing this again.
I want to go home. Will I ever see home again?
And now, for our younger listeners, it's Puppy Playtime! Hi, and welcome to Puppy Playtime. My puppy Star is only young, but has already had a taste of fame. She was recently invited to take part in a photo shoot by the UK magazine Dogs Today. Buddy also joined her, and they both enjoyed it. Star is amazing. She's very confident and took it all in her stride. She coped very well with meeting all the new people and posing under the hot photographic lights. If you're a reader of the magazine, be sure to look out for Star and Buddy's photos. This is not her only claim to fame, as she has been on television. When the TV channel E4 were filming interviews about the recent series of Big Brother, they asked Judy to take part. That wasn't all, though, as they wanted a dog in shot too. Judy was ready to get Buddy, but they asked for the little dog. Judy, never stuck for words, gave her opinion on the Big Brother housemates. Star got in on the act, whining and wriggling. Clearly, she has some of her own opinions. Having two dogs is great fun. We put a lot of thought into what breed would fit into our family. And Buddy and Star are well matched in personality as a result. The big difference between them is size and consequently the amount of exercise that they are happy with. Especially while Star is young, we are trying not to over-exercise her. However, Buddy enjoys romping for miles. In order not to compromise either of them, we have invested in a dog stroller for Star. She enjoys travelling in Star when she's tired, and a few toys and treats make sure she's happy. It also attracts a lot of attention, as people can't believe there's a dog in the stroller. Till next time, have fun with your dogs and make sure your dog has fun with you.
The Year of the Dogcast by Julie Hill. I can hardly believe that we have been making Dogcast Radio for a year now. It's gone so fast, and yet we've packed so much into it. Covering Crufts and the Wag and Bone Show were definite highlights for me. It was wonderful to be involved in both. One, a long-standing world-famous event, and one, a great new and fast-growing tradition. Another exciting opportunity was when we were allowed behind the scenes at the Highland Wildlife Park for a fascinating insight into wolf behaviour. During that Scottish visit, we also found ourselves surrounded by sled dogs, which was great fun. Meeting so many gorgeous dogs has been so very enjoyable, from the gentle Great Danes we've encountered, right through to the excitable Chihuahuas, and including all shapes and sizes in between. I always knew I had an enormous enthusiasm for dogs, but I never realised before Dogcast how many others shared it, and to just as great a degree. Talking with others who love dogs and support them in numerous ways has been a chance I wouldn't have missed for anything. From a personal point of view, I've always written, but I've always started far more projects than I managed to finish. Working on Dogcast, writing Buddy's Diary, all the two-minute fiction features, and the majority of the articles, has meant that I have had to focus and meet deadlines. It has brought out a discipline I will always be grateful for. Now, to avoid litigation, and in all fairness, I should point out that for Buddy's diary, Buddy comes up with all the ideas. I just do a little fine-tuning. Receiving feedback on the fiction features from our worldwide audience has been most welcome. During the year, our canine family members have doubled from 1 to 2. This has been wonderful fun, although it has involved hard work. Watching our dogs make friends and grow to be at ease with one another has been captivating. Buddy has always been playful, but the addition of a puppy and the influx of toys she has brought have brought out the puppy in him even more. The professional trainers I have had access to through Dogcast have been invaluable, both to the Dogcast show and to me as a dog owner. I would like to take the opportunity to thank all the people who have contributed to Dogcast in our first year, and to express the hope that these relationships will continue and strengthen. So, what of the future? More breed profiles are already planned, as well as more interviews, training advice, fiction, and all the items that make up the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover, let us know. Being part of the Dogcast team during the past year has been an all-round terrific experience. So happy birthday, Dogcast, and here's to many more. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
And going into a shop, I noticed a sign saying, "Danger, beware of dog." I looked around, but I could only see a harmless old basset hound lying snoring on the floor. "Is that the dog people are supposed to beware of?" I asked the shop owner. "Yes," he replied. "Well, he doesn't look so dangerous." "Why did you put that sign up?" I asked. "Because," the shop owner replied, "before I posted that sign, people kept falling over him."